This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, March 6th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, for years, Arkansas and Oklahoma have battled over water quality limits with regard to the Illinois River watershed. We have a report on the state's recent agreement to work together on the issue. Plus, we learn more about Pure Charity, a local nonprofit helping other nonprofits get their projects funded.
First, the Arkansas Senate voted yesterday afternoon to override a veto by Governor Mike Beebe of a bill that would ban most abortions after 12 weeks.
Senate Bill 134 passed. 20 yeas, 14 nays, transmit to the House.
Only a simple majority is needed in each chamber to override a veto. Now it's up to the Arkansas House. The bill's sponsor, Senator Jason Raypert of Conway, is optimistic the House will also support an override.
I'm very proud of those that passed the bill the first time, stood with us this time. I don't know how a person can change their vote. You're either pro-life or you aren't. It's not a partisan issue, should not be. I've talked with the leadership in the House. They're ready to vote the bill. I understand also, in fact, I've had some Democrats tell me that they did not vote on the last override vote, but they're going to vote for this bill.
Governor Beebe has said he feels the bill violates the U.S. Constitution, and abortion rights supporters have vowed to file a lawsuit. Last week, the legislature overrode another veto that banned most abortions after 20 weeks.
An effort by one Arkansas lawmaker to cap state spending fell short of the support it needed to pass yesterday. Republican Representative Bruce Westerman of Hot Springs says his proposal was necessary so legislators could finally limit increases in government spending.
Now, I've heard it said before that on the railroad tracks of life, if you don't keep moving, you're going to get run over. We have a good budgeting system here in Arkansas, but we can make it better. And I believe that putting this growth on expenditures will make us more fiscally responsible. I believe it will put us on a consistent, responsible, and sustainable track of government growth that aligns with the growth of our state's wealth and economy.
By a vote of 49-47, the Arkansas House rejected Westerman's bill, which would have linked the average expenditure limit to the average growth of personal income in the state. Governor Mike Beebe had opposed the bill, saying it would wreak havoc on the state's budget.
An Arkansas House panel rejected a proposal to raise the state's minimum wage. The targeted measure would have increased the state's minimum wage to $8.25 an hour for most workers, though it would have continued to exempt students working part-time from a full-time minimum wage. For about an hour, advocates spoke for and against the measure. Montine McNulty is executive director of the Arkansas Hospitality Association. She says high fuel, food, and labor costs make it difficult for businesses to increase pay, and changes could lead to employee and service cuts.
If a business has revenue above $500,000, they're under the federal minimum wage now. So we really are talking about the small business owner and how this would affect them. I fear that hours would be cut. This bill says it would go into effect in October, which for many businesses is in the middle of the business year.
Jane Gray Todd, with the Coalition to Raise the Minimum Wage, says a hike in the minimum wage would boost the economy because low-income Arkansans will use that money to buy necessary goods.
Because I can tell you again from experience, poor people, they don't have a savings account. It's just really hard to do that. And $15,000 a year to live on for one person, and you think about paying, you think about it yourselves, honorable members here, how would you live on $15,000 a year or less?
However, the proposal failed by a 6-10 vote in the House Committee on Public Health, Welfare, and Labor. Two Democrats joined with the Republicans on the panel to reject the bill.
The Arkansas legislature yesterday passed a bill that would give the Secretary of State's office the authority to grant franchise agreements to cable television providers. Currently, that authority is in the hands of local city or county governments. Some cities are unhappy with the bill. In fact, last night, the Fayetteville City Council unanimously passed a resolution stating the city's opposition to the bill. Fayetteville City Attorney Kit Williams says under the bill's provisions, cities won't be able to make stipulations to service providers when franchise agreements are granted by the Secretary of State. Those stipulations would include customer service compliance conditions that Williams says the city has put in its agreements for years.
When Cox decided to go digital, which certainly is their right, because the city asked them to, Cox provided free digital boxes for 2 years for people that would ask, so that the people on the lowest end of their tier, the people that were getting the government channel and just the basic broadcast channels, could in fact still be able to see that with their analog TVs. And so we have always, as a city, striven to make a cable accessible to most of our citizens, the most it's economically feasible to do. At this point in time, we are no longer have those rights.
According to the bill's language, the Secretary of State's role in granting franchise agreements would not include imposing limits or conditions on a franchise license beyond what it specifically allowed in the bill.
Plans for an aquatic center in Sebastian County are one step closer to moving forward after the Fort Smith City Board of Directors last night approved an amendment to the city's interlocal agreement with the county. At its meeting last month, the Sebastian County Quorum Court declined to shell out an additional $820,000 to fund additional park amenities requested by the public. But District 6 Justice of the Peace Danny Aldridge says this amendment should clarify some lingering issues JP's had with allocating additional money to the project.
This interlocal agreement amendment that was passed last night by the city's board of directors answers a lot of the questions about the city's intent to repay the money, how they'll repay it, and the minimum amount that they will pay each year until it's paid off, with a maximum of 4 years. I think this will answer a lot of the questions, a number that the JP's had, pertaining to the city's sincerity and willingness to repay the funds.
The Quorum Court is expected to make a decision on the city's amendment to the interlocal agreement at its next meeting, March 19th. If justices of the peace don't approve the amendment, then the project will likely be tabled until it can be fully funded.
The city of Bentonville last night received recognition at the state level. At the 39th annual Arkansas Governor's Conference on Tourism, the city was awarded a Henry Award for Community Tourism Development, an award given annually to an individual or organization that has shown success in local resource enhancement through development, innovation, and creativity. Other nominees in the category were the Paris Chamber of Commerce and the Sculpture at the River Market in Little Rock. According to the City Wire, the Henry Awards honor Henry Dittani, the man many historians credit as one of the early explorers of the natural state.
Forecast calls for partly cloudy skies tonight, with lows from 26 in northwest Arkansas to 32 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the upper 50s to lower 60s. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with overnight lows from 32 in northwest Arkansas to 37 in the River Valley.
States of Arkansas and Oklahoma straddle the Illinois River watershed. Oklahoma has strict rules regarding pollution discharge limits into the Illinois, which it classifies as a scenic and recreational stream. Arkansas's rules are less strict. As a consequence, both states have battled for years in both the courts and the press over water quality limits. But late last month, both states agreed to work together, building upon a pact struck 10 years ago. Ozarks at Largest Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The Illinois River flows deep and green above polished gravel, creates wide ripples over miles of forested shallow bedrock, and curves around tall, sun-drenched farm fields. The headwaters are in Washington County, Arkansas, near Hawkeye. The Illinois crosses into Oklahoma at Siloam Springs, then flows southwest until it's impounded at Lake Tenkiller south of Tahlequah. And although it looks clear and clean, downstream in Oklahoma, the river has been declared impaired by the Environmental Protection Agency under the Clean Water Act. The story begins in 1970, When the Oklahoma legislature recognized the fragility of the Illinois watershed and declared the river, as well as six others, scenic. 3 decades later, urban and agricultural development, especially industrial poultry farming in northwest Arkansas, was heavily polluting the river. At that point, millions of tons of poultry house bedding or litter from more than 2,000 poultry farms was being spread annually on grazing fields as valuable fertilizer. Contains lots of phosphorus, a key poultry nutrient. That nutrient washes off into streams, forcing aquatic plants to bloom, stealing oxygen, and sliming waterways. So in 2002, the Oklahoma Water Resources Board set a very strict numeric in-stream phosphorus limit of 0.037 milligrams per liter and signed a compact with Arkansas a year later to evaluate and control phosphorus discharges. Northwest Arkansas Waste Treatment Plant spent millions of dollars upgrading their effluent to try to meet Oklahoma's standard, and the state enacted a set of new laws to better regulate poultry litter use. But those laws don't come close to Oklahoma, which transports 80% of all poultry waste out of the watershed. In 2005, the state of Oklahoma sued Tyson Foods and 5 other poultry companies for polluting the Illinois River. The case went to trial in U.S. District Court in Tulsa in 2009, concluded a year later. A decision is still pending. Oklahoma's phosphorus metric recently underwent technical review and was found to have merit, but Arkansas still maintains its standard is too strict, not scientifically credible, and was poised to file suit to prove a point. Now instead, Arkansas Attorney General Dusty McDaniel began talking with Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to try to resolve the impasse once and for all.
And what I hoped and what I came to learn quickly that he also hoped and believed was that we should turn the page on the history between Arkansas and Oklahoma and do our best to stop being litigants and combatants in court and go about the business of working towards improving our shared environment and our shared economy in northwest Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma.
Attorney General McDaniel says despite all the haggling, the watershed has greatly improved.
The phosphorus levels in the Illinois River watershed and throughout the scenic rivers of eastern Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas have dropped dramatically over the last 10 years. It's truly a success story. But the question is, what's the next step? And I thought that it would be much better for us to get the best available science, the best available plan going forward, and not base it on what we believe to be the least, or at least lesser quality scientific data from 10 or 12 years ago.
And this new water quality study funded by the state of Arkansas will measure stressor response. It's an EPA-approved testing method to calculate just how much phosphorus a river can tolerate, yet remain healthy. An independent laboratory will be chosen to conduct it.
That vendor will be chosen by a committee, which is comprised of 6 individuals. With obvious qualifications outlined, to be appointed 3 by the governor of Oklahoma and 3 by the governor of Arkansas.
Why is Arkansas footing the bill on this 2-state water quality study?
Well, obviously, the litigation over the years has been very expensive for Arkansas. We're the ones who are asking for a new study that is rooted in science, and the negotiations have been very meticulous over the course of more than a year. And the last thing I thought we ought to be arguing about is the price of the study. So one of the first steps of goodwill by the state of Arkansas was to take the cost of the study off the table on day one.
The project will take about 3 years to complete, McDaniel says, and is critical to brokering a final workable water quality relation between both states.
Here you see an old problem, a complicated problem, an expensive problem, and a Republican attorney general and a Democratic attorney general. We didn't take that approach. We came together. We have worked out what we believe to be an effective and important agreement that should be exciting to the environmental and business communities of 2 states. And that is a big step that should make the citizens of both states proud and hopeful for the future.
A new compact, however, will not have any bearing on Oklahoma's longstanding lawsuit against Arkansas's poultry industry. The Tulsa World reported that the water quality negotiations had been hammered out in secret, but Attorney General Dustin McDaniel says it was important to keep negotiations contained.
It was hardly in secret. Everyone from every agency in both states that were involved with this and aware of the issues were informed and were working together with one another. Now, I will say that we didn't riddle the process with a bunch of press releases, and that made it much more effective in communicating with one another, because there was instead of dueling press releases, which has been the history between Arkansas and Oklahoma between our predecessors, there was an open telephone line, and we spoke to each other as professionals and with respect, and it was a great process.
Diane Clay, spokesperson for Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, says the project will be coordinated by agents from both states.
The committee that will be put together will have three people from Oklahoma's governor and three people from Arkansas's governor, and they will help oversee the study. And they'll also be doing interim reports and also final reports to make sure everyone knows what's going on with the process and what they're using to determine their outcomes.
A goal is to strike a balance between Arkansas's industrial development and Oklahoma's recreational use of the river.
I don't know how it's perceived in Arkansas. I mean, I know in Oklahoma it's a recreation destination. Obviously, they have companies set up there where you can float the Illinois in canoes. People camp. It's very family oriented. A lot of people head out to, you know, Tahlequah and eastern Oklahoma to enjoy it, and so it's something that they want to protect. But, you know, people in Oklahoma are practical too, and they know that, you know, business is important and agriculture is important. And I know in Arkansas it's the same thing. So they need to find a balance to make sure, you know, those types of businesses can continue, but we can still have a clear river for, you know, recreation and enjoying nature.
A key side player in all this is Save the Illinois River, or STIR, an Oklahoma-based citizens coalition in Tahlequah that joined the state of Oklahoma in suing EPA back in the 1980s to block the city of Fayetteville from discharging treated sewage waste into the Illinois River. The Supreme Court ruling allowed, for the first time, downstream states to set and enforce water quality standards. And STIR co-founder Ed Brocksmith says because five of Oklahoma's six scenic streams originate in Arkansas, it's time for Arkansas to adopt a strict numeric limit.
Arkansas doesn't have a numeric limit. It has what is called a narrative limit. In other words, it places certain values on water quality, none of those values having a definite number.
In an email response for this report, Catherine Beninati, spokesperson for the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, confirm that Arkansas has no in-stream numeric limit. Narrative criteria are statements describing a desired water quality goal, but perhaps a new pact and new scientific research may help both states to find common water quality denominators. Again, Ed Brocksmith.
Under terms of the agreement, it is conceivable that the 0.037 milligrams per liter limit that Oklahoma has adopted for phosphorus in scenic rivers could be weakened, or it could be strengthened, or it could remain the same.
And Arkansas's environmental and agricultural agencies will be bound to readjust regulations and permitting accordingly. Still, it will take decades for the Illinois River watershed to purge excess phosphorus. An independent groundbreaking phosphorus mass balance study released in the spring of 2002 by researcher Mark Nelson at the Arkansas Water Resources Center in Fayetteville found that the nutrient tends to accumulate and then very slowly leach downstream. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Funny is as funny does. I couldn't help but notice here, will you model for a painting session? Is this on the up and up or what?
Yes.
What sort of modeling would it be?
Portrait.
Why would I have to be nude for a portrait? If it's just a face.
We practice flesh tones.
Join me this week on the What Do You Know Radio Hour, PRI, Public Radio International.
What Do You Know, Saturday mornings at 10 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It's Wednesday, March 6, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We're going to look ahead a day.
Okay.
Because some of us are not good at snap decisions anymore. I've already tangled up my notes and
plan ahead.
Demystifying the Art of Portraiture. Henry Rennie, who is a professor at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith and is fascinating, he's a photographer, I believe, an artist himself, will speak at 6 o'clock tomorrow night at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. Get to know your new museum. It's $8 for non-members. And you don't need any introduction to this person. John McDonnell will be speaking and signing books at 6:30 tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. His book is called John McDonnell, the Most Successful Coach in NCAA History. Hoorah!
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Speaking of the devil, look who just walked in. He knows just where to find me. Here we go again. I can tell he's gonna ask me to dance, but that's not as far as he wants to go. I need 10,000 angels to help me tell him no.
Melinda Gail McCready was born November 30, 1976, in Fort Myers, Florida. McCready grew up singing in church, but said she knew from age three on she wanted to be a country music singer. Accordingly, she studied voice for years and graduated from high school early so she could pursue show business. McCready took tapes from her karaoke sessions in area Fort Myers karaoke bars to Nashville, Tennessee to get a record deal. She allegedly gave herself 1 year to do so and was said to have signed a recording contract only the week before her self-imposed deadline. Within months of its release, Mindy McCready's 1996 solo debut, 10,000 Angels, went platinum and charted four singles, including the number one song, Guys Do It All the Time. The album eventually went double platinum. The next year, Mindy McCready released the album If I Don't Stay the Night, which charted three singles and went gold. Also in 1997, McCready became the youngest country artist named to the Country Music Association's board of directors and announced her engagement to actor Dean Cain. The Country Music Hall of Fame said at the time that McCready's, quote, humorous head-on approach to male chauvinism created for her an immediate fan base. As a 20-something country music sensation engaged to television Superman, Mindy McCready entered the 21st century with loads of promise. However, her relationship with Kane fizzled in her 1999 album, I'm Not So Tough, underperformed, and McCready changed labels. 2002's self-titled debut on Capitol Records was her fourth solo album and intended to be a new start, but Mindy McCready wouldn't release another album for another 8 years until March 2010's critically acclaimed I'm Still Here. Interim, McCready, however, stayed in the headlines through domestic squabbles, arrests, suicide attempts, and more. In August 2004, she was caught in Tennessee with a fake prescription for OxyContin. In March 2006, she had a son. In 2007 in Florida, she was charged with battery after a fight with her mother. In 2008, she was arrested for parole violations in Tennessee. Later the same year, the story also surfaced of her decade-long affair with baseball pitcher Roger Clemens, which allegedly began when McCready was only 15. In 2010, a pornographic video of McCready and her boyfriend was released by Vivid Entertainment. In April 2012, she had a second son named Zane, with record producer David Wilson. By that time, McCready and Wilson were already well known to authorities in North Central Arkansas. Wilson killed himself on January 13, 2013. McCready died February 17, 2013, of a self-inflicted gunshot wound in Cleburne County in Heber Springs on the front porch of her home at 1132 Fox Chase Drive. It was the same spot where her boyfriend had committed suicide. She'd been served court papers that her mother take over care of McCready's two children. Mindy McCready was 37. Here in its entirety is Mindy McCready, Heber Springs, with her last song, collaboration with her boyfriend producer David Wilson, I'll See You Yesterday. Mindy McCready, who lived and died in Heber Springs in Cleburne County, with I'll See You Yesterday. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansongs since 1999.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The Illinois River Watershed Partnership and volunteers will plant 4,000 tree seedlings along creeks in Bentonville, Fayetteville, Gentry, Prairie Grove, Rogers, and Springdale on Saturday, March 9th. Volunteers are needed, and more information is available at irwp.org.
The University of Arkansas Scholar Cantorum, the university's premier choral ensemble under the direction of Dr. Stephen Caldwell, presents its spring concert tour, Flowers in Springtime. It's March 8th, that's this Friday, at 7:30 p.m. at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in Fayetteville, and March 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Bentonville, and March 10th at 3 p.m. at the Cathedral of St. Andrew in Little Rock. Music will include Morten Larderson's famous Songs of the Rose, and works by Eric Whitaker, Gerald Finzi, and William Billings. The concerts are open to the public, and admission is free.
The Fayetteville Forward Green Economy Group will meet on Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. in the large conference room at Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce. For more information, greeneconomy.accesscommunitylink.org. Also Thursday, multi-sensor remote sensing and mapping at Spiro, discovering intrasite organization. That's the title of a 7 o'clock talk on Thursday at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. It's part of Archaeology Month in Arkansas. The presentation, which is open to the public, is for a meeting of the Arkoma chapter of the Arkansas Archaeological Society and the Oklahoma Anthropological Society. For more information, 479-788-7812.
And next Thursday, March 14th, Circle of Life Hospice invites the public to its homewarming for the new hospice home, which is located at 900 Northeast Verdant Street in Bentonville. The community event will include refreshments and tours of the new facility. For more information, nwacircleoflife.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Pure Charity is a national organization based out of Rogers. Just out of beta testing last October, it's barely been open to the public for 4 months. Since getting underway 2 years ago, Pure Charity has been expanding to college campuses, including the University of Arkansas last fall. Hannah King, a senior at the U of A, along with Chris Wooden, a sophomore, is a campus catalyst. Tomorrow, the two are hosting World Water Thursday on the U of A campus. I spoke with them about the event, but was first joined by Jalea Ratliff, social media and events coordinator for Pure Charity in Rogers. She began with a description of the organization.
We are a nonprofit, and we help other nonprofits get their projects funded through an online community. So we are a website that hosts projects for Phil partners. We work in six cause categories of food, freedom, health, water, opportunity, and relief. So they can go onto our website and they post projects that fit within those six cause categories that need funding. We currently work with over 125 nonprofits, and so you can go on there and you can search by cause category, you can search by location of project, and you can search by field partner. Just make it easier for you as the user to find what you're passionate about and what you want to support.
Can you give me a scenario?
So you can go onto the website, and when you create an account, it's set up much like social media, where you can follow nonprofits, you can follow your friends.
So me as an individual?
Yes, you okay. As an individual. You can create an account just like you would on Facebook. And then from there, there's two things you can do. You can fund projects, so it's kind of a portal where when you want to give, you're not just writing a check, throwing it to the wind, and hoping it lands where you want to, but it gives you power to choose which nonprofit it goes to and which project of that nonprofit it goes to. And we really encourage our nonprofits to be very transparent, where they're going to give you updates. So really connecting here to there, wherever there may be, which is very difficult to do. And we also have two ways that you can fund projects. You can give directly out of pocket. You would pay and check out just like you would shopping online with your debit or credit card. But we also have what we call a rewards network. We work with over 1,000 online merchants. So when you're shopping online through any of those merchants, you get a percentage back into what's a giving fund. So that giving fund is similar to a charitable savings account.
How did you recruit
nonprofits and businesses, these online merchants?
Well, with the nonprofits, it kind of goes two ways. We have a field partner team, and they have reached out to nonprofits, but we have nonprofits reaching out to us. We just got back from an event in Philadelphia, and I already know emails are rolling in like, hey, never heard of you. Awesome. Love what you're doing. How do we get on board? And then they've also reached out to them. With the merchants, we also have a merchant team, and we kind of are in a really good spot geographically, being in the same city as Walmart.
Is there a list of merchants at the website?
Yes, you can go and there's a list of merchants. You can search through like health or beauty, shoes, clothing, such as that. But there is also a plugin you can download. Since we have over 1,000 online merchants, we don't expect you to memorize those by any means. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. So you can download the plugin and our logo will actually pop up. So if you were to type in gap.com in the top left corner, our logo would pop up and it's kind of saying, hey, we're a pure charity partner, and you can click on it and find out what percentage you'd be getting back. Then you shop like normal.
How did you guys become involved, Hannah and Chris?
Well, they're wanting to reach it out to campuses across the U.S. and obviously being so close to Rogers, Arkansas was one of the ones that they chose. And I saw it through an email and I applied. I've been wanting to work with a nonprofit, and it was perfect for what I was looking for. And that's kind of how I got connected.
And I got an email from one of my friends, and I saw it, and I started doing a little research on it. I thought, that looks like something I really want to do, I really want to get involved in, because I wanted to, you know, help, you know, contribute, you know, to all the different, I guess, charity projects, but I didn't know how, and I thought this would be really good to get, you know, students involved on campus in doing that. So I applied, and I guess they liked me. So
and here you are.
So, Jalea, how does the University of Arkansas, how do students fit in to what Pure Charity is doing?
Well, all college campuses, including the U of A, we have found that college students are very influential to the demographic older than them and younger than them. And so by getting them on board, college students are very passionate and are very goal-oriented. And so bringing in these causes, we see that these students are really passionate about supporting things and bringing change into this world and bringing hope to others that are less fortunate. And so,
okay, so World Water Thursday is your spring semester event.
Yes.
So it's this coming Thursday.
Yes, it is.
Tell me a little bit about World Water Day.
So World Water Day is actually March 22nd, and it is a day celebrated around the world, and it is put on by United Nations. And so we were wanting to bring something to the U of A campus with that and realized that March 22nd, all of our students are going to be gone on spring break. So why not put it beforehand so students can be aware of it and kind of expand more than just on March 22nd or just on March 7th on World Water Thursday.
So the global water crisis, just that there's a lack of fresh drinking water contaminating our waterways, like that kind of...
Yes. Yeah. The statistics, people that lack clean water sources around the globe is astounding because there is a lack of clean water sources. It goes into sanitation issues. It goes into health issues.
What kind of events have you organized for Thursday?
Well, it's going to be a all-day affair. The speakers, people that work for these nonprofits and organizations will be on campus that day. And they will be going to different classes throughout the campus to speak to them about water and about how it kind of relates to what their class is. That day, we'll also have booths set up in the union where people can come and learn more about specific nonprofits or water projects, our Pure Charity RSO, many of things. And then that night, we'll be screening a movie called La Source Film. And that's going to be really exciting. It's about how people in Princeton.
Yeah. So La Source is a documentary that was created by Generosity Water about two brothers. And so one brother is a janitor at Princeton and one is still living in Haiti. And they have this dream to provide their village, which is the name of the village is La Source, with clean water access. The story caught wind at Princeton and these college students rallied around this janitor that they had made friends with to be able to raise the funds and the support and the resources they needed to be able to do this. And so it's just a storyline following those two brothers as well as the students. And that's what makes me really excited to show this on the U of A campus, because it shows the power that college students have.
Well, and so you talk about the power of the college students. What kind of reaction? This is a new RSO. I mean, you just came to the University of Arkansas campus last fall. So what kind of reaction have you seen from the campus community?
Well, we've seen a lot from the students and also other student organizations like reaching out to us and wanting to get involved. I know the Hogs Care, or that thing that they're doing, I think they want us to be involved with that, and I think they kind of got that from when we did an event last semester called Random Generosity Day.
I think it's very new and exciting to people, like when we did Random Generosity Day, when we would buy them coffee at Starbucks, they were all very like, oh, you know, this is for me, like, why are you doing this? Which was really exciting and cool, and we saw a lot of just Twitter action and a lot of things through that, where people went and did things for others, and just kind of started a movement. And that's kind of what we want. We know it's new, and it's going to catch on really well soon, but it's just waiting for that time.
And so Random Generosity Day, it was kind of pay it forward idea?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we did that, and we passed out snacks at the library, water at the 5K for homecoming. So we're kind of on campus all day long doing things.
Mm-hmm. All right. And the website's Pure Charity?
PureCharity.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And to find out more about Pure Charity's RSO and their event, you can go to PureCharity.com/Thirst Day. So thirst like water thirst, but Thursday like it's on a Thursday.
Right. And it involves water. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, guys?
I think we're good. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right.
For just giving us this opportunity.
Yes. Thank you.
Chris Wooten and Hannah King are U of A campus catalysts for Pure Charity. Jalea Ratliff is the social media and events coordinator for the organization. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. When Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art opened on 11-11-11, we knew that the art scene in Northwest Arkansas would change, and so it has. And you can look just a few blocks away from Crystal Bridges to see evidence of that. Daniel Hintz is executive director at Downtown Bentonville, Inc., and joins me. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Kyle. How about yourself?
Very good.
Good.
Fair to say it's an emerging art scene in Bentonville?
It is an emerging art scene in Bentonville, and I think the community is wrapping their loving arms around this. Both artists and non-artists alike are really getting excited about the opportunities that are available for folks in the downtown Bentonville area.
Of course, we're just on the cusp here of Norman Rockwell,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to bring a lot of people. You have 21C that just opened up with an amazing modern collection.
Yes.
And by modern, I mean contemporary.
Yes, yes.
Living artists, mm-hmm. art created since the turn of this last century.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that, but there are galleries as well.
Absolutely. On March 16th at Studio 124, which is at 124 Midtown Shopping Center, Dayton Castleman, who is also the museum director over at 21C, is going to be doing an installation piece. Thomas Merritt, it's interestingly enough, the curator and owner of Studio 124, will be having something at Art Northwest, which is Dayton Castleman's space, and that's at 702 Northwest 8th Street. He's going to be opening up a show on March 16th. The Press Room, which is a great coffee house and restaurant in downtown Bentonville. Michelle G. Marshall, she's a botanical photographer. She has a show that will run until the end of March at T.H. Benton's, the Eureka Springs Artist Registry. Zeke Taylor and Raven Dirge of Norberta Philbrook Art Gallery often run a variety of art through that, so you can definitely stop in there. And the Bentonville Convention and Visitors Bureau also has an art gallery in their storefront area. And right now it's Dr. Jim Arkins, who's a Bentonville native, been around for a very, very long time. And then Erica Nelson continues at the Norberta Philbrook Art Gallery. And just to understand that Norberta Philbrook has a lot of artists cycling through there, so they may pop up a highlight. But you can constantly see artists from all over Northwest Arkansas there.
Can I ask what could be a silly question?
Mm-hmm.
The name Philbrook, as in the Philbrook in Tulsa?
The Norberta Philbrook Gallery is actually named after one of Zeke Taylor's monkeys that he's famous for.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Raven and Zeke are good friends.
Okay.
And so she named one of the monkeys in the piece Norberta Philbrook.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been wondering.
Yeah. So you look at these smaller art galleries and these smaller experiences, but how are some of the major institutions getting involved in the emerging art scene, as you mentioned earlier? 21C, which is a museum that
yes.
you can sleep in, they're actually offering...
You have to make reservations. Let's point
yes,
out, you just don't walk in.
No. And they have comfortable couches, but
yes.
they're not to sleep in.
Yes.
But they're offering docent tours on their current exhibitions and site-specific collection tours. All of these are free and open to the public and offered each Wednesday and Friday at 5 p.m. And then, of course, with Crystal Bridges, you mentioned the Norman Rockwell show that's opening up. Tickets to the American Chronicles, The Art of Norman Rockwell, are on sale. The show runs March 9th through May 27th. Tickets are $12. Members are free. But on top of that, Crystal Bridges also has a wide variety of just events that they're doing throughout the week. You can actually look at their WOW events. Wednesday Over Water. Kay Stagario and Chef mm-hmm. Jacob Hard do a wonderful job. They're the next one, Wednesday, March 13th, is actually all about water. And they're going to be playing with the whole concept of water. Tickets on that are $30. And members of Crystal Bridges receive a 20% discount. They have a collage-making studio. So in the evening, you want a hot date with someone and want to make a collage, it's a beautiful marriage of those two things.
Is that a thing?
Hey, it's called a first date,
okay,
I suppose, right? But that's great. Tickets are $40. Membership has its privileges, 10% discount. And then they also have a cultural hour every Wednesday and Friday from 5 to 7, where you can come down to 11, just hang out, engage in some great food, great art. And they also have new kids' menus. And so they're really trying to engage the whole family with a lot of those things. You know, and so when you look at sort of special exhibitions, you look at the new gallery shows that are opening up. And then on top of that, you also have a wide variety of festivals and other things that we're planning on doing. We have the Art and Culinary Festival, which is now the entire month of June. We're really grateful to Cox Communications for helping us out with that one. We have the Arts Fet, which is our big opening party on June 1st. The Art Walk, which is our juried art show, on June 7th and 8th, an art market, which is now going to be going starting on June 13th all the way through mid-September.
Oh.
On every Thursday night from 5 to 8, artists can come down and sell their works.
Every Thursday night?
Every Thursday night. So this is almost like a farmer's market, but for artists, solely focused on artists. We have another one called Notes at Night, which is a whole jazz music series. The 4320 Film Competition, which you have 4,320 minutes to produce and show a film, which is awfully wacky.
Break that down. I mean,
yeah.
4,320 minutes is...
72 hours.
Thank you.
Yes,
okay.
yes. And we have an art park, so if you really love to just make stuff, you can come down every Saturday morning at the Farmer's Market from June 15th to the 29th to do things. And then, of course, the special culinary events that are happening throughout that entire month. So right now, we are accepting applications for visual artists to come on board for both the Art Walk, which is June 7th and 8th, and then also the Art Market. You can actually go to zapplication.org. It's a great online artist registry, and you can register for that.
And you do not have to be from Bentonville.
No. We're getting folks as far away as California interested in this.
Okay.
And I think as we talk about the impact of Crystal Bridges and 21C Museum Hotel and the type of national buzz that it's creating for not just Bentonville but all of Northwest Arkansas, we're getting on the attention of some the radar screen of some great folks. Even so far as to say that the Bentonville Convention and Visitors Bureau is now doing an artist and gallery inventory right now. And so if you're an artist or a gallery or a showcase for artists somewhere in the city of Bentonville, the Bentonville Convention and Visitors Bureau wants to know about you so we can better incorporate you into the overall scheme of what's happening in Bentonville.
You know, Rosie, I don't know how they keep track of this, but at one point, someone from Crystal Bridges, there was a bit of a notice that said, Rosie the Riveter is the most photographed image there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have many people coming in for this Norman Rockwell, perhaps
mm-hmm.
the most... one of two or three most well-known American-born artists of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, household name.
Mm-hmm.
Are you prepared for that? I mean, you're going to have a lot of people coming in from not just Eureka Springs or Fort Smith or Tahlequah.
Right.
From further away.
Well, I think, Crystal Bridges continuously amazes both with their staff and mm-hmm. their ability to handle as many people as they've done since they first opened. And they've been able to take all those folks and say, hey, there's some great things happening all over Northwest Arkansas, particularly, you know, in downtown Bentonville. I think we have some great restaurants that can handle that. Just the general experience from the walking trails to everything else going on, to Eureka Springs, to Fayetteville, to Rogers. I mean, there's a lot of stuff for people to do all over Northwest Arkansas. And so I think with the amount of folks that will be here for that show, you'll see an impact all over Northwest Arkansas. And we're very appreciative of Crystal Bridges and what they've been able to bring to our region.
Okay, so if you want to know more about any of the arts in Bentonville?
They can go to our website, downtownbentonville.org, or give our office a call. In this modern era of technology, you can still talk to a human being. Yeah. So feel free to give us a call, 479-254-0254, and just give us a call for a chat.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Mitt Romney rehashes his 2012 loss, and on the Today Show, Jeb Bush says he won't rule out a possible 2016 bid.
I won't, but I'm not going to declare it today either.
President Obama makes several cabinet nominations, and sequestration gets real. I'm Lynn Neary. We go another round with Ken Rudin, our political junkie. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, and national and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information.
A listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Old Alabama.
And where is Old Alabama again?
In Madison County, northwest of Huntsville and south of, well, Alabama.
South, of course. Of course. Perfect. All right. Well, we have a trivia question to take care of. So yesterday, Kyle and I were talking about it was March 5th. So on that date in 1946, Winston Churchill gave his famous Iron Curtain speech.
Okay.
And it was actually not too far from here, which I didn't know until I looked it up. Kyle knew it, of course. But
of course.
But I did not know this. And so our question was, where was it? What was the town?
Okay, I have no idea.
See, I didn't either. It was at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri.
Okay, so
I had no idea. I also didn't know where Fulton, Missouri was. So
I don't either.
I looked it up this morning, and it's about 5 hours north of here, about near Columbia.
Okay, so not in the listening area.
Not in the listening area, but it was far closer than I would think, because I don't think of Missouri when I think of Winston Churchill.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
So we have 4 pairs of tickets to give away, and the winners will get to see Masterworks 3. It's a concert by Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, Saturday at the Walnut Center at 7:30 p.m. Do you want to draw some names?
Sure.
Okay.
Out of the ceramic cow. Okay. All right. The first one is Barb Moraglia.
Okay. First one. All right. Second one is P. Camille Ruos. And I'm very sorry if we're butchering names.
The third name, Elizabeth Morsund.
Okay. And our last winner is Shannon Mitchell.
Okay. So each of those 4 people will win 2 tickets.
Mm-hmm. Each will get a pair of
tickets to the Sona Masterworks Saturday night.
Yes, and your name will be at will call. We will contact listeners in just a little bit to let them know that they have won and get any more information that we may need from them. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Christina Thomas will be back to be your host for the day. And the 2 of us will be back together again on Friday.
Right.
Thanks again for listening, and have a happy Wednesday.